Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Thursday, the 8th of April, recording from London at 9:50 p.m. Now, since tomorrow is a holiday, and I'd be in serious trouble with Mrs. Fuller if I didn't take that holiday, I'm going to do the big picture, long-term, global outlook, which is normally reserved for Friday. So, first thing I'd mention is that you will undoubtedly have noticed the degree of nervousness that exists generally in markets, leading to the choppy activity that we've seen really right across the boards. Really, it's even affected the commodity markets very, very recently. And, you know, I've been a bit jittery in here for the last couple of months, feeling that it would be harder, was becoming harder to score gains. So far, that hasn't been reflected too much in the actual trading and investment results, but nevertheless, the big picture is, well, maybe a little muddier than usual. And that's what my bones tell me, at any rate. Now, there have also been some absolutely draconian forecasts. I've got one up on the website here today. It's quite an interesting one. Otherwise, I wouldn't have posted it if it was just another scare story, but it's a detailed piece on the property market. I know some of you out there who follow this quite closely will be able to refute aspects of the article, but it's not badly written, and it is a big concern for a number of people, if not an immediate time bomb. So where does that actually leave us here today, against a background where some people have been saying, as you heard from Mark Farber and you've heard from Anatole Kaletsky and a few others, did he say it? Maybe not. I might have misrepresented him on that, but certainly from Mark Farber, saying that since all these markets had inflated together, then could they perhaps all contract or come down together? Well, it has to be a possibility, although there's normally a pecking order. And the two markets that I've cited as I felt feeling that they were probably most pivotal in here were the dollar, because of all the carry trades and general expectations, and the other being bond markets. But I'll get to those in rotation, and I'll stick to my usual rotation, starting with global stock markets. Now, yesterday I mentioned that we had a short-term overbought condition in the U.S. and a number of other markets following the very good rally. I didn't feel that it was a serious situation, but we'd seen that sharp rally. We'd seen some of the indices return to areas of previous resistance, and of course we had the holidays coming at the Easter break, at any rate, for many of us. And additionally, then there's the turmoil going on in Iraq right now. So you've got a lot to unsettle investors here generally. So it would be hardly surprising, say, to see a bit of a pause, but that's a short-term comment, and I'll make just one other and then get back to the big picture. The really important dynamic, which is related to the big picture, was what we saw on the 25th of March, when the NASDAQ gave that very, very good signal that really drew a line on the charts and for a number of other indices as well from that point on, just saying that in terms of the big picture, we weren't cracking just yet, that the markets were not going to move down significantly, stock markets weren't going to move down significantly as as an increasing number of analysts had been saying ever since those upward trends that began last March were broken. Now, you may recall my view. I've said that I feel that we probably saw a penultimate peak for the U.S. indices and the European indices, possibly some of the Asian indices, but that's by no means certain. I'm still very much of the view that we are in the latter stages, definitely in terms of upside potential for the U.S. market before the next big downward turn. But we could get quite a bit of ranging activity. We could see new highs. Very good chance. I think a better than 50-50 chance that we will see new highs for the main U.S. stock market indices, and therefore Europe would follow suit, as indeed would most indices around the world. But that in terms of overall upside potential, albeit taking it from those March lows, that we've seen the best of it by far. So ranging with somewhat of an upward bias is the best that I envisage from Wall Street and the European markets. Now, against that background, there would be some dramatic exceptions in Asia. And the real front runner that's showing the terrific relative strength is right now, of course, Japan. And it's got an appeal on several levels. I mean, there's the factor that Japan was first into its secular bear market, had a 13.4-year secular bear market. The bell rang identifiably back in April. Very end of April, really in May, it became clear that that might well be it after the Nikkei stock average had fallen by 80%. You might remember the FMP that I put out at that time to that effect. And subsequently, Japan has outperformed more often than not, with the not being that period from September on to about a month ago, when it had that long consolidation. Now Japan is very much in form again, and being a developed market, that really is attracting a lot of money out of Europe and from the US into Japan, making all the difference, because it's the foreigners who've been bidding up the Japanese stock market, not the locals. The locals, for the most part, have been sitting it out or actually selling into the rally, which I suppose is hardly surprising given their 13.4-year bear market. So, you know, they've been turned off as far as equities are concerned, and it'll take them a long time to get back in at any, with any sort of degree of enthusiasm. On the other hand, from a Western perspective, Japan looks incredibly exciting. And so, as I've said, it wins on valuations, and it wins on cycles, and it's certainly showing the relative performance here right now. And I think that's really going to continue, barring a small consolidation or two. When I look at that second section index with its 30 out of 31 days on the upside and counting, I'm here and back up near a former high and psychological resistance level. It would hardly be surprising if we saw consolidation, but the performance overall is just rock steady. And as far as that 14,000 forecast is concerned for the Nikkei stock average, that seems to be very much within reach, as I said, as long as we don't get a serious crack on Wall Street. And a serious crack on Wall Street does not look imminent. But, you know, I'm going to take it one week at a time in here, particularly at this stage of the cycle when we have seen a number of these uptrends lose money and break into longer ranging patterns. Okay, so how do we actually play it? Well, to me, the Asia is the real deal, and you want to be way overweight in Asia. And I have almost no positions in the U.S., and I have no positions in continental Europe. I've got a little bit in the U.K., as you know, but I'm way, way overweight in Asia. And I'm also playing this through the futures. So with something like Japan, I'm playing the stock market futures, and I resisted the temptation to add to my Nikkei stock average position here today. I looked at that and I thought, I really ought to add this. I've mentioned it in the last few days. I'm certain if it continues in this form, I'm certainly going to do that at some stage in here. One of those things, I even picked up the phone and dialed and talked and got the quote and so on, but didn't do it here today. And I've also got the Hong Kong Hang Seng Index, which is much more chancy, probably. And in terms of other Japan participation, well, I don't have much in the way of individual shares. As a matter of fact, the only one is that Zero Inc., which is doing very well, fortunately, that I've talked about and illustrated on a number of occasions. But the whole Japanese market is doing well, so there's nothing exceptional about Zero Inc. It's really quite speculative, as a matter of fact. My other positions would be in the self-administered pension funds, and a lot of that money is particularly where it has to be in funds with a couple of the policies is definitely in Japan and is certainly going to stay there for quite some time in all probability. Okay, now moving on here. Well, no, one more point on this. Is Asia going to uncouple from the US and Europe? Well, it hasn't before, not to any real extent. Yes, it could, and given the increasing importance of the Asian economies, the real growth that they have there, the asset reflation that's underway there, yes, they could. And I'm banking on them giving us being strong enough to give us enough time so that when Wall Street is clearly losing it on the upside and commencing another significant downward trend that we'd be able to exit. That's by no means assured. Anyway, but at this stage, I think it would be the triumph of hope over experience to assume that Asia would completely uncouple from a significant downturn on Wall Street. I don't buy it. I think the risks are too high. But you know what you can do? You can just watch the chart performance, and as long as Japan or whatever else we're in, and I'm in India and I'm in Thailand, as you know, quite extensively, we could ride it out. Okay, moving on to bond markets. Now, these are very important. If we get into trouble here, as far as markets are concerned, we really are going to, isn't it, if the world markets get into trouble in terms of any kind of overlapping general downturn or deflation of these bubbles, financial market bubbles that we've seen, I would feel that one of the first areas where we would see it was actually in the bonds. And the bonds I've described for quite a long time as being in a top formation development. And I said that in June, I felt that a secular bull market in bond prices had ended, and that really, depending on whether you're looking at the European government bonds or the US or the Japanese, it was about 18 years duration overall. And we had the spike up to the highs and the bond prices, down to the yields, of course. We had the sharp drop into September, and then that gradual ranging recovery rally, which I've been describing. The overall pattern is the spike top, type 1 top with right hand extension, as I teach it at the chart seminar. It looks like a textbook case example. And in recent weeks, we've seen enough deterioration in those prices. They've come down quite sharply, more sharply than they had gone up, although they haven't retraced all the gains, taking them back down to the September lows. But they've come down fast enough to raise the very real possibility that last month we saw the highs in that right-hand extension rally phase. Now, I also tried to put this in context as saying as long as the bond market slide didn't turn into an absolute rout, and it certainly hasn't, that the effect would on stocks would actually be bullish, because it would suck some money away from that fixed interest sector, particularly where there were a number of leveraged trades, and it would deter that activity and cause people to look for, well, markets like Japan that were performing. And I think it's also assisted in the stock market rally that we've seen since the 25th of March, that particularly brisk rebound. So, how am I actually playing it? Well, I'm short the JGBs, and you might recall that earlier in the week I jammed my stop right down because they had fallen quite a long way, and I just wanted to have a more cautious stance in case we got quite a bit of additional ranging. That would take very little on the upside to stop me out of that position, and in that event, then the risk would be that instead of them moving up higher to allow me to get back in at a higher level, which would be ideal, that they just kept going down, and I would be out of that particular market. And So that's the risk. But in an overall top development phase, these patterns very often take longer than most people expect, more ranging. You can see all the potential, but the rest of the market isn't ready. The rest of the crowd, in other words, isn't ready to make it all happen, or the events that are going to cause this to happen haven't all fallen into place. But in terms of that big picture, long-term perspective, I suspect that over the next decade or more, that I will be short long-term government bonds a good deal more than I'm long long-term government bonds. Now, what would cause me to be long long-term government bonds again? Well, first, if they fell a long way and that dragged stock markets down, yields moved up in the long-dated bonds quite a bit, and global growth got choked off by rising interest rates or whatever other factors. Most likely it would be rising interest rates. Then I might see myself backward long positions in the bond market. But right now, this looks to me like a straight short play. And while there's a lot of deflation talk in this article on the US housing, I felt that their timing on this was probably out by a good many months, if not years. But you never know. That's why I like to look at all these things. I want to be aware of the various different policies and then just watch the market. What's the market actually telling me? That's my final arbiter. You know, we can have all sorts of theories, but there's only one fact as far as the markets are concerned, and that's the price and what it's actually doing at any given time. And I want to be aware of the risks, but I don't want to be adjusting my positions in line with those risks until I see some warning signals, some very clear warning signals, if not emphatic evidence in the markets to confirm those theories. So, at this stage, therefore, I'm still running longs in the equities, as you know, and those positions are much bigger than my bond market shorts at this stage, because of that overall top development activity, whereas we've had trending activity, still have trending activity, arguably, in a number of these stock markets. Now let's go on to the currencies, and this is the toughest, I really feel, at this stage. I mean, I look at this euro dollar, and you know, one day it looks like, well, maybe we've just bottomed, it's getting support down near that 120 level, and then we see it fall back as it did in here today. But overall, I have to say that despite the support, the main thing that it will influence me in this are the dynamics. And the bigger days are still on the downside for euro dollar. That means that the euro is still under pressure. And I'm aware, as we all are, those of us at least who are interested in currencies, that there are those very, very big US dollar short positions out there, the carry trade, which people like Anatole Kaletsky has been talking about so much. Just going to take a wee little drink here. So the euro is still, well, we have no clear evidence that the euro has bottomed against the US dollar. And I mentioned the US dollar as one of those key markets that could trigger a series of countertrend reactions in other markets. So, dollar weakness, people would, they've seen that before, that's what they're mostly looking for, that's what they're mostly pushing their position for, rather. And that would be normal. That would not trigger a general countertrend reaction by many, many financial markets. On the other hand, a sharp dollar rally from current levels would be a factor that could trigger a knock-on effect in a number of other markets, and not least in commodity markets. So I'm going to cough a second, a little tickly throat, excuse me. Okay. Enough of that, David. Let's talk about some of these other currencies, but they're all basically tied in with the dollar here. My best guess is that we're going to see no big fireworks, but more just ranging around in an uncertain fashion. So I think it's not going to be all that rewarding. And I was pleased to be able to close out my dollar yen position at a profit. And it's right back up where I got out. It's at 106.33 on the spot rate. And that's up 111 in here today. Now, this is an interesting one because if you've been watching the financial TV channels at all over the last few months, last many months, or if you've been looking at some of the currency comments that have been coming out of the big financial houses, the one thing that, in my mind, that they all seem to be saying, and apologies if you represent one of those institutions in currencies and took a different view, but the vast majority of them were all saying if the US dollar went below that 105 level against the Japanese yen, that it was going to fall straight to 100 and on its way to 95, and some people were saying 85, and I've even heard 75. Well, of course, you know, it broke down. It was last week. Didn't follow through. Stayed below for what, 2, 3 days? I don't have that chart under my nose right now, but then picked up again. And here we are at 106.32, and you can bet that there are a number of nervous dollar bears around. So I'm glad I'm out of that trade. If I did anything, though, with a pistol at my head, as they say, I'd be long the dollar against the yen right now. Now, where I am long, and this was another trade that I could have, I was a little bit cavalier in going on this. I could have timed it better because I went into that euro yen thinking that it had probably, well, it was fallen down quite sharply, and it was back near a prior support level, right around that 131 and a quarter level. And so I bought it, saying that the more conservative stance, and perhaps what I should be doing, was to wait until it got an upward dynamic. Well, of course, you know, it went straight down again, and then got the upward dynamic a couple of days ago, and it's steady in here, 128.47. So I'm holding on here because that upward dynamic, that was a tradable signal. As I said, I've resisted the temptation to add to the position because I just think there are better things around. But overall, in these currencies, I think it's going to be choppy. Sterling, is sterling going to go higher? Well, the market came back a little bit here today because the Bank of England did not raise interest rates, but it still has interest rate differentials in its favor. And we certainly know that the Bank of England has every intention of raising interest rates further, albeit gradually, so that will improve that interest rate differential against most other currencies, since there's not a lot of upward pressure on interest rates elsewhere at the moment, or no, not many central banks are talking about increases in interest rates. So that would be in sterling's favor against the dollar. Trouble is, it's already had such a big move here at 183.31. Okay, maybe it goes back up to 190 or a little bit higher, but we've seen the best part of the move, I maintain. Sterling would quite possibly improve a bit further against the euro because, while sterling rates are likely to go up, the European rates, if anything happens there near term, they're going to get cut. So those are some of the plays that are still on offer, but I find a lot of them relatively easy to resist at this stage because of the various different asset classes. We have more choppy activity, trendless activity here in the currencies than in most other areas, in my view. Well, now moving on to the commodities, and you know I've been really hot on this area, on my supply and elasticity theme of the year, and they've been doing really exceptionally well, and we've had a number of very fine opportunities in the commodity markets, particularly in the metals. But they're showing signs of metal fatigue in here. Now, not all of them, but for instance, the tin, which I saw run away from me on the upside, that had lost momentum a few days ago. Hardly surprising, but it capitulated in here today. This was down $400, bringing back to $8,250, and that's a clear downward dynamic after that very good run on the upside. Zinc is below where I got out and some of you got out a while back. That's hasn't come off in a big way, but it's 1038. I mean, here that's down 750. The nickels eased back a little bit. I mean, they are all down today, except for the aluminium, which is had lagged previously and is one of the steadier ones. It that really suggests to me is that a lot of these hedge fund speculators, that they're sort of rotating positions in and out of these things, and they ran tin, that was the best on the charts, and got overextended, and now they're coming out of that, and aluminium has been bid up recently, having lagged previously. But overall, these patterns are just, bottom line, they're not as good as they were. And copper, I was talking about buying copper, and then when the dollar started to strengthen against the euro again, I held off. That copper has eased back, and copper could easily break down out of this little trading range. Frankly, I'd be delighted to see it break down out of the trading range. It's right around where I got out previously, and I'd love to have another opportunity to buy copper after a good shakeout. I'm not going to go in and short these with these patterns, or some of my thing want to play the other side, because the primary trends are upwards, and I don't like to play counter trend reactions. I like to wait for my opportunities within primary trends. Doesn't mean I've got a bull bias. I'm just as happy to go short if that's where the primary trend is, and the only one of those that I can point to across a whole asset class is, of course, with the bonds showing all this topping activity. Okay, so I still think that the supply inelasticity theme is very much alive, but we're encountering the profit taking in here right now, and I think I'm going to be disappointed not having been a little bit more alert with my soybeans, because they got hit in here today. So this is the third small downward dynamic that we've had within this range, and they came back quite sharply. I'm just looking for that price on my screen, and 988. So this is getting closer to my stop once again, and the pattern looks a little bit more dodgy this time. And also, it fell against the background of some quite good news. There were downward revisions of crops, at least of the Brazilian crops, and I saw this on Bloomberg today, and people talking about much, much higher levels, and the market's gone down. So I suspect I'll be stopped out. It will be at a profit, but a much reduced profit, which isn't very clever. Corn, which some of you still have, is very, very steady still, although it's lost a bit of upward momentum. Now, my big position in commodities is, of course, still the palladium. That had another new closing high in here today at 330.45 after a high of 332.50, a $10.50 range in here today. And I was feeling a little bit uneasy about it, not because of anything that the palladium chart was doing, and only in a very, very short-term context, because if these other metals were all going to weaken, you don't need to be an analytical genius to appreciate that somebody's going to say, well, let's take the palladium profit while it's still up there, and they can trigger a self-feeding reaction. But today, platinum, which has underperformed palladium, as you know, if you saw that chart I posted yesterday, recently, having outperformed for so long, And platinum had a terrific upward dynamic. It was up almost $25 in here today to 915. In percentage terms, it was only a fraction bigger than this 7.95 gain, nearly $8 in the palladium, to taking it to 330, 40, 45. But say platinum with that big upward dynamic, and these are sister metals really, up to 915 and a quarter. That made me a little bit more relaxed about this overall. Now, I'm certainly not changing my mind on the palladium, but it's done very well recently. And you know, if they were all going to go down, well, if the others continued to weaken, then that would obviously increase the odds that palladium would get another pullback, which would be a buying opportunity. Now, if I miss getting out and it just falls, then I would add a few positions. In other words, I would increase my long position on a baby steps basis, as I've done before. And I'm in a position to do that because I'd cut back to my core position, which is not insubstantial for me in this. And if it continues to run on the upside, I might consider about reducing the core position a little bit. But I'll try not to do too much. Try not to be too clever in this. But I don't want my senses dulled and trading this. Okay, enough on all that. Oil, last but not least, had quite good gains here today. Portfolio dogs department, my crude oil position, now that's back up in a tiny profit, but it's been mostly underwater since I opened it. And I said to you that I felt that while the oil situation is very bullish on a long-term basis, that demand is just rising inexorably, and that's challenging the supply production, that the crude oil and particularly the gasoline prices were political dynamite here in the countdown to the November presidential election in the US, and therefore the US can only have a limited influence, the White House can only have a very limited influence on this, you'll appreciate, but nonetheless they'll exert what influence they have, I think, to hold this up. So I probably will take that out if that if I see that a bit steadier in here again next week. But the one I did pick up today, just by chance, I don't know where it caused me to have a look at it, but I had a look at that natural gas, and the pattern was so impressive, and I had not considered that previously because it was trading at a contango. I think it still is, although a very, very small one. But the chart looks so good, and I thought, well, that's not going to be a political issue, certainly not in the short term if that goes up. And so I picked that up and then saw that Bloomberg report, which I have posted, which you can read. So in terms of the overall chart activity, then the natural gas looks best, and if we can believe just a quarter of that story that I posted from Bloomberg, and hopefully that's not all in the price, but the price hasn't accelerated on the upside, as you'll see on the graph, but I am buying up on the highs. But that long-term chart that I put up, the weekly, puts it in perspective. It's not overextended on the upside, and it's got good support underneath, so that's the one I'm likely to back. And if I did shift out of the crude oil, I'd probably increase my my natural gas position, assuming that was holding steady, let alone appreciating. Have an absolutely terrific long weekend, and I will be back writing comment of the day and broadcasting again next Tuesday. Enjoy.